It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021, and you know what that means. It's time to get nerdy, y'all. Welcome to episode number 175 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. I am Lom, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, and I've got my comrade in gaming commentary right here with me, the miggity, 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 miggity Mac, also known as Maxion. Mac, what's up, buddy? It's been a week.
It has been a week. As a matter of fact, it feels like it's been a very short week, though, right?
Yeah. That's what happens when you have a weekly podcast. There is a week between episodes. What's happened the past 7 days for you, man? What's going on?
To be fair, though, we did the last one on Thursday, so it's only been 4 days.
Fair point. So in 4 days, what's happened? Anything cool?
Oh, man. Nothing really cool, personally, I would say. There's been plenty of more cool news and many of interesting things, but for the most part, it's just been, you know, it's just been a thing. I've got a little bit of a cold today, so I apologize in advance for any sniffling or sneezing you might hear. I'll try my best to fix it in post. But nonetheless, that's about the only interesting thing. I might have figured out a trick for printing paper into a disc-bound notebook from my printer. So
this
that
is cool.
You know, I can feed the paper in and print onto said paper, which will be nice.
This is why you got to be here for the live show, because he just showed exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah, so, that's about as interesting as it gets. I am a very boring person.
No, you're good, man. So I celebrated my birthday on the 29th, and it was phenomenal. My wife got me a Stream Deck. I don't know if you've heard of the Stream Deck.
I have.
Yeah, it's a pretty dope accessory. And you can basically use it to increase efficiency on your computer. You press a button, a program opens. You press a button on your Twitch stream, something happens. It's very, very cool. So that was probably the highlight of my week, was getting this new toy and just setting it up and playing with it, having a good time, man.
That's awesome.
And now for my birthday, we did, you know, Illinois is starting to open back up. I'm still pretty, I take COVID pretty seriously, but we were able to go have a socially distanced dinner at a Brazilian, one of those places where they bring the meat by, if you've ever been to one of those, Fogo de Chão. And I ate a lot of meat, and it was really good. Now, funny story from the dinner, they had like a salad bar that, you know, you had to like put your mask on and wear gloves and all this. So we went and got some fruit, right? Because you can't just eat straight up meat, Mac. You just can't do that. So I got some papaya, and I sit down to eat the papaya, and I take a bite, and it was not good papaya. And it, like, to the point that I took a bite and I was like, yuck. And that's not something an adult would usually say when they take a bite of food. And so my wife just busts up laughing. And we didn't realize till afterwards, but I think the restaurant staff heard me say that, because for the rest of the evening, they were like, is everything okay? You know, do you guys need anything? Is the food good? And I was like, yeah, why aren't you asking everybody that? Because I'm just a regular guy like them. They must have heard me say yuck out loud.
You're no regular guy. From a distance, anyone could see that you are a VIP.
Stop it. Oh. Stop it.
I can't stop, shan't stop.
Point of the story, don't say yuck out loud when you're at a restaurant, even if it's impulsive and unintentional. Mac, on that note, I say we do what we do best and hop right into that gaming news, man. What do you think about that?
Let's do it. And can I open with one?
Please, please open.
My apologies if you were going to cover this one, but we found out this week that Stadia is going to be closing down their in-house game-making ventures. So all they will be doing from here on for their Stadia games and their Stadia exclusives are going to be those things provided from third parties, nothing being done in-house anymore.
Yeah, and this is a big deal. I don't know if you think it's a big deal. I do. And the reason why is because it means that they're just going to have third-party stuff. Mm-hmm. And really, the software sells the hardware. If we know for a fact that Stadia does not run third-party stuff as well as the PlayStation 5 the Xbox Series X, or even quite frankly, the last gen stuff, no one's going to buy a Stadia unless there's some killer app, some killer software on there to make them pick it up. So I quite frankly think that this is the death of the Stadia. Mac, am I going too far with that statement?
We might be going a little too far with that statement, but then again, don't forget that I myself have been kind of rooting for the death of the Stadia for a while, mostly because I, you know, again, feel like it's the beginning of the end for video game ownership when we're talking about streaming only, so I feel very strongly against it. And so to see what I think, and I agree with you, is the beginning of the end for it kind of makes me happy a little bit in that kind of schadenfreude way.
Well, here's the thing, man. I think that within the next 5 to 10 years, I would like to see another console. Like something different from a new company that's not Nintendo, that's not Microsoft, that's not Sony, that's not PC. And something that's not just like, hey, here's this little thing you can play retro games on. Like, I would love to see a new full-fledged piece of hardware that can play current software but also has some new exclusives. Like, I think that that could only help the industry, is more competition. The Stadia is not it, and as disappointing as that is, they just weren't able to execute on their vision, and that happens. So best of luck to them. Maybe they can turn it around, right? If anything, we saw that last year was a year of people turning stuff around. Among Us made a huge splash, right, after not being a big game. What's the other one? Escape from Tarkov made a huge splash, like came back after having been out a couple years, and a lot of people are playing it now. With hardware, it's really different if you don't get ahead of steam in the beginning, but we'll see if they can turn it around. Well, let's move on to our next news story. Mac, this one is just kind of a cool cultural phenomenon. We're all familiar with Fortnite. We all love Fortnite. We play it daily. You know how we do here at Two Nerds in a Pod. Me and Mac...
Press X to doubt.
We actually don't play Fortnite. Nothing against it, just not my thing. And I guess it's not Max either. Someone in Metzgirl in the chat said the KFC console is lit. That's true. Literally, it heats up your chicken. But back to Fortnite. This is on GameInformer.com by Marcus Stewart. As fun as it is to masquerade as Mando from The Mandalorian in Fortnite, how fun or terrifying would it be to be on the opposite end of his rifle barrel? And by that, I mean actual Mando and not some preteen rocking his skin. That's the premise for Mando's Bounty, Fortnite's exciting new limited-time mode. The Star Wars-flavored mode tasks players with earning galactic credits by hunting down designated targets, displayed on bounty pucks, or other players in general. The catch is that whoever takes the lead becomes the bounty of the Mandalorian himself, meaning the top player will have to face off against one of the galaxy's greatest hunters. If you can best Mando and achieve Victory Royale, you'll be rewarded with the Beskar Umbrella, a spiffy cosmetic that can presumably withstand lightsaber beams, laser bolts, and giant monster teeth. Mac, Fortnite's killing it, man. As much as I don't play Fortnite, they've had an Avengers mode. Like, they've done all kinds of crazy events to keep it fresh. Like, if you could see any crossover in Fortnite, like, what crossover would it take to get you to hop in?
Honestly, it might take some kind of Mega Man crossover to get me in on Fortnite.
I feel like that's too predictable of an answer.
Yeah, it really
but it,
is.
But I get
but
it.
I'm a
I
predictable
it.
Guy.
Yeah, and that's good, man. Consistency is key. But like, let's say TV or movie, because really, like, they're doing a lot of that. They've done, help me out, chat. Okay. I know they've done the Avengers. They've done some other Marvel stuff. They had, like, the X-Men skins at one point. Like, what TV show do you think that could be in there that would make Mac hop in?
So I think Star Trek might do it. Stargate would also be interesting. Although, to be fair, there's not that much that you could pull in for the Stargate thing. Basically, you'd be looking at, I don't know, giving people FNP90s for a gun. And I suspect that the FNP90 is probably already in, you know, Fortnite.
Alex Mann says he's a bit annoyed with limited time modes and looks at Rocket League. Yeah, sometimes limited time stuff is frustrating because you want to keep playing it, right? Super Mario 35 leaving in March, but a lot of people really like that game. Sometimes really popular modes become permanent, so we'll have to see if that happens with the Fortnite mode here with Mandalorian. And I love the Mandalorian, so it'd be cool. Matt, let's talk about something that could have been. This is on Kotaku.com. by Mike Fahey. Let's read about this. This is not something I was aware of. In 2015, the Wall Street Journal reported that Nintendo and Netflix had joined forces for a live-action The Legend of Zelda TV series. I knew nothing about this. Mac, were you aware of this at all?
I had heard the rumor, but kind of that was all that I had heard. That it was, yeah. Oh, yep, Legend of Zelda. And I remembered back when there was that, I forget who did it, but it was an April Fool's thing and they did that thing. And I think that was something that we talked about on the pod at one point in time.
Yeah, it was really well done.
Yes, it was, which gave me hope. And I think, remember thinking, man, if it's as good as that April Fool's thing that we saw, yep. then maybe yep. it could be very promising. So, yeah.
Yeah, I had the same thought. It was like professionally done. Well, this story goes on to say what happened with the Legend of Zelda TV series, right? According to comedian Adam Conover, Nintendo canceled both the live-action Zelda and an unannounced claymation Star Fox show because someone at Netflix spilled the beans. Nintendo likes to keep its secrets secret, be they about video games, television shows, or new hardware. So it makes sense that having the news of its proposed live-action collaboration with Netflix leaked before an official announcement would have the famously private company up in arms. In a recent interview with Surf Times, Adam Conover recalled how Nintendo wound up pulling the plug on the Zelda project. We're not going to read the whole thing. Bottom line, Mac. First of all, is this even a legitimate reason to cancel something because it got leaked? And this is 2015, so let's say 6 years ago. I mean, this is... What are your thoughts before I say what I'm thinking?
Well, I mean, for my part, I don't think I would have called it off if it had been leaked. As you know, sometimes the teasers and stuff like that give you something to look forward for. Alex, man, thanks for letting us know. Yeah, it was IGN that did that live-action one. But, yeah, sometimes teasers like that, I think sometimes you don't know that you want something until you've got that first taste. You know what I mean? I feel right. this way about pineapple. Until I tasted actual, fresh, true, good pineapple, I didn't realize how much I enjoyed it.
And especially on pizza. You know what I mean? Like, I never knew how good pineapple was until I tasted it with cheese, with sauce, and with dough. Like, there's no better way to eat it. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Continue. I apologize.
Anyway, back on planet reality, I think it was probably would have been a good thing to know that a live action Zelda thing was in the works. It's a shame that the plug got pulled, and I don't think I would have made that decision. Of course, Nintendo has billions of dollars and Mac does not.
Well, I'm really interested to know how far along they were. Like, was this show in production already and then it got leaked? And also, a claymation Star Fox? Dude, that would have been so cool. That would have been so needed. You know, and honestly, this is 2015. Now, Netflix has been popular for a long time. But 2015, if there were a couple video game shows, I feel like it would have paved the way for so many more. Now, we've gotten some, right? We've gotten The Witcher. We've gotten Castlevania. We've gotten some others. But I feel like that would have been fantastic if Nintendo had done that. So, just my thoughts. I don't think that's a reason to cancel it because it got leaked, but it is what it is. Moving on to the next news story, man. Oh, we got two more. Which one do we want to do first? Let's talk about the big one. And actually, we'll probably just talk about this one and then move on. Mac, this is about your favorite company. Actually, I don't know if you like this company or not. It's about Amazon. And we'll read this. This is on Kotaku.com by Ethan Gack. Jeffrey Preston Bezos, I didn't know that was his middle name, announced today that he's stepping down as the CEO of Amazon, less than a year after it unreleased team-based shooter Crucible because nobody wanted to play it. First Stadia, now Bezos, you hate to see it. This is funny writing, and it almost implies that Crucible's failure is the reason he's stepping down, which I'm absolutely certain it is not, but that's funny. Quote, I'm excited to announce that this Q3 I'll transition to executive chair of the Amazon board and Andy Jassy will become a CEO, the richest man in the world wrote in a memo to the staff. I'm in the exec chair role. I intend to focus my energies and attention on new products and early initiatives. It's unclear if those energies and attention will be directed at helping Amazon release better games or not have one of the worst bro cultures in the gaming industry, according to one former developer who recently spoke with Bloomberg. Mac, ooh, this is harsh. Like, I feel like there's so much passive aggressiveness in that article. But what does that have to do with us? Now, obviously, Crucible failed as a game. We just talked a few minutes ago about the potential or my desire to have another piece of hardware, right? Another gaming hardware console, at least. Do you think Amazon would be the ones to do it? And is it something you'd like to see?
Well, I mean, when you think about who has the money to drop into R&D, you know, you think Amazon. You don't think KFC, of course, but you do think Amazon. And I would have pointed to them as being the most likely.
Yeah, like, they're so well connected. I mean, they own Twitch, right?
Yeah, they own Twitch. They clearly have a good connection, and you would hope, although there's plenty of evidence to suggest otherwise, a good understanding of games and gaming.
Right.
And you would think that they would have sufficient data to be able to pull things together. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I have been very impressed by with respect to Netflix, and I have a point, I promise, is that Netflix has done a very amazing job of designing content in such a way that the pacing is always really good, that you are able to watch many episodes at once, and that you want to keep watching episodes. They give you the cliffhangers at the right time. They give the delivery. And I feel like that has been a function of data crunching for our however many years of viewing habits that they had before they started making their own Amazon original content. And you would hope that something like that would be able to transfer, you know, the idea, the content, the knowledge of when people start playing, when they stop playing, what they like, what they don't, would uniquely position Amazon to give a top-tier gaming product. But sadly, it just hasn't translated.
Well, you're right, though, because once again, they own Twitch, and so they see that viewership data, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I mean, they know how long people watch certain streams. They know which games are being watched the most. And they know at what point people stop watching. Like, they have all the metrics of what people like to watch. Doesn't necessarily mean that they'll know what people like to play, but I can't think that it would be that different. You know what I mean? And, you know, and frankly, Amazon has plenty of experience making hardware with Alexa, with all kinds of other awesome devices, with the Echo Dot, Echo Show, all that stuff. They could easily make a console that incorporates Alexa that is tied to your Amazon account, and you can just purchase the games through their platform. You know, they don't have to deal with Apple Store or, you know, any of those other vendors to take a cut. They've made a game, even if it wasn't the best. So it'll be interesting to see. What did Galvatron say in the chat? He said, this is part of the reason why Microsoft has stuck to the Xbox business. They know that their arch rivals, Apple, Amazon, and Google, want to get into gaming, so they want to establish a presence before the others step in. That could be true, but Microsoft is established. It's not like they're not here. They've been here a while, but I think that's a valid point. Mac, anything else you got to say about this topic that we're on, about Amazon?
No, I mean, you hate to see it, poor Bezos. But yeah, you're right. That article was very passive-aggressive, almost hilariously so. But yeah, no, I hope that we get, like you were hoping for, another option in the console market in the near future. But yeah, who knows if it'll be Amazon? Who knows how much of the, you know, of the direction of the good ship Amazon will change under this new leadership?
Well, that has been our news for the week.
All right, well, now that we've seen what's going on right now, let's take a little look into the past with some video game history. So I have a few different things that I want to talk about that have come out this week in years past. For starters, in 1996, this week, not only the founding of id Software, but also the launch of Duke Nukem 3D, a PC game released as shareware, starting its very long and storied history of sadly disappointing gamers. I do jest, because Duke Nukem 3D, I quite loved it when I first received my shareware copy back in the gosh, I want to say late 90s, but I quite enjoyed Duke Nukem 3D. 1990, in no particular order I'm taking these, in 1990 we saw the shipping of Super Mario Bros. 3 to the United States. Man, Super Mario Bros. 3, 1990, a little bit later on in the, you know, in the NES lifespan there. And I mean, a fantastic. I mean, some of the things that they did, like, for example, I do believe that Super Mario Bros. 3 was the first game to have diagonal scrolling so that you could, like, scroll up and down.
Yeah.
You could scroll left and right, but you could also go diagonal.
No, Mario 2. Mario... Like, think about when you came in Mario 2 and you, like, fell from the sky.
Oh, but that was just wrapping around. You just wrapped around. You didn't actually scroll to new things. I'm pretty sure in Mario 2...
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, in Doki Doki Panic / Mario 2, I'm pretty sure that you couldn't, you know, the screen transitionings were fixed to up and down or left and right.
Yeah, fair. I think you're probably right.
Yeah, but there's lots of interesting software tricks that they employed to make that work. That's beyond the scope of what we're talking about right now, but there are plenty of good fellow nerds on YouTube who have done things on that. The diagonal scrolling, that blew me away in Mario 3. Let's see, in 1996 we said goodbye to the Sega Genesis / the Sega 32X, because even though it had been announced that Sega would no longer be supporting it, this marked the last game launched, which for me... It doesn't so much matter. The death date of a console isn't the date that you say, we're not supporting it anymore, or whatever. It's that last game release. That's when it theirs. And yeah, Sega, Alex Mann, to your point, Sega did indeed try to keep the Genesis going for a while with add-ons, with the 32X, with the Sega CD, things that you could clip, basically get that tower of power going. But the last game launched, The Amazing Spider-Man... The Web of Fire. I don't really know much about that game. Yeah, I don't know either. I think by that time, I might have already been past it, but who knows. We've got 2017, the release of Always Awakening, and I know that's a little bit more recent than I usually go, but Always Awakening is not only a great tribute to, to old-style games, to retro gaming, it also is currently being demaked. I'm putting that in air quotes because that's kind of what they call it. Because it's
what does
a
that
PC
mean?
Game, but somebody is actually developing it to play on the NES. The game very much feels, when you play it on PC, it feels just like, this could be on an NES. But somebody is actually putting, with the help, assistance, and the blessing of the devs, they are putting Always Awakening onto the NES, so I very much look forward to playing that game on my console. Let's see. 1998, release of Final Fantasy Tactics in the US, the best Final Fantasy game ever. Come at me, bro. And then I guess just the last one to hit... Oh, I'm sorry, did you like...
No, I was just going to say I'll take your word for it. Because I've never done Final Fantasy, and I feel like that's one of my major sins as a gamer. So I'll take your word for it. That's the best one.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're willing to go with me on that, Mr. Nice Guy. You will not be disappointed. Your trust in me will be, will be rewarded. Last thing, though, in 1999, we said goodbye to Trilobite Inc. They closed their doors. That's when they were the ones who had made the games Seventh Guest and 11th Hour. Very much point-and-click mystery games. Took a lot of cues from games like from games such as Myst and the like. Although they had a lot of more, especially with the Seven Guest, I think they were doing the full motion video of people sooner. I could be wrong about that. But nonetheless, it was a shame to see them go. It was great when they started back up their company in, oh gosh, I want to say it was 2011 or so, and have worked on a couple things since then, but this was the closing of their doors for that first time. Anyway, those are just some notable events, some interesting things for you to chew on to look back and be like, huh, yeah, that's what happened this week in years before.
Fantastic. Well, let's do our next thing, which is the topic of the week, where we talk about something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. This week, this is probably not the hottest story, but it is a hot story, and it brings up an interesting conversation. Yeah, hot. Hot like a jalapeno. Hot like a pepper. Hot like a hot tub, to use a third example. This is on GameInformer.com, written by Liana Rupert. It's about Mass Effect 3. Mac, first and foremost, have you ever, and I know I've asked you this before, but I literally can't remember. Have you ever played a Mass Effect game?
I have not. I am familiar with the Mass Effect games, but I have not played them.
Okay, outer space alien RPG. That's effectively like the elevator pitch for it. Really, really phenomenal games. The second one was an absolute masterpiece, and they're remaking them, so...
Bless you.
Excuse me. Mac, I might have just caught your cold through the power of the internet. Anyway, it says, the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer is the hidden gem of the community. Being able to experience combat as Asari, Atrel, Aturian, as an Asari, Adrel, Aturian, and more was thrilling, and the mode quickly developed a very dedicated player base despite initial concerns. So why didn't BioWare bring it back for the Mass Effect Legendary Edition? We sat down with the team to find out why this edition was deemed too complicated for the remastered development period. When speaking with Kevin Meek, environment and character director and project director Mac Walters, the topic of multiplayer came up and why the studio decided to nix its inclusion. When speaking with this, there's some typos here. He compared multiplayer to restoring a Porsche, and the analogy actually worked. Mac, here's the quote. I had all of these analogies early on to try to help people understand what this remaster is going to be about, he said. It's one thing to take a 1982 Porsche that needs to be fully restored, but now I want you to imagine that it actually buried in concrete. So you've got to chip away all of that, and every time you go to try something, it's like, is this even going to work? Do I blow the engine turnover? Wait, what? You know, it's just a lot of work, and I think people underestimate what it's like to do this game. Because at every step, you're given an agonizing choice. Is this the thing we want to spend our time on and really want to try and improve? And where will this lead us down the road? Mac, bottom line, these three games are being remade. These games have a very rabid fan base. To my point, when Mass Effect 3 came out, people put out a petition to try to get the ending of the game changed. You may remember us talking about this in the past.
Yeah.
So here's my question for you, just with remakes and remasters in general, how faithful do they need to be to the original to get your attention? If there was multiplayer, does there need to be multiplayer in the remaster, or would you rather they just focus on making it what they want it to be?
Well, I think we are in a bit of a bind because we have this sort of loosey-goosey thing about the definitions of what we're dealing with, right? Remake, remaster, stuff like that. I feel like we've kind of done a disservice because we've been so loosey-goosey. We don't know what to expect when they say we're doing a insert, you know, whatever here. So I feel like remake, to my mind, means that you're taking the game and you're going to be redoing parts of the game, features of the game. And in that context, if you're doing a remake, I'm like, yeah, go ahead, cut multiplayer, add multiplayer, you know, whatever. You're doing a remake. It's going to be a whole new game. We're going to have, you know, we're going to have Resident Evil 2 remake, right? We've added new things, changed things
around.
Great point.
Great point.
And or Final Fantasy VII remake. You know, we are shaking it up. But if you're going to be doing a remaster, in, you know, improve the graphics, do things that were there before, keep them there. I mean, I think it's up to them, whoever they are, in order to set the correct expectations by saying, here's what we want to do, and then naming it and doing it appropriately. So I feel like I can sympathize with his situation, because it's like, oh, dude, you know, you've got a lot of people who are sitting there, you know, tapping their feet, waiting for this and expectantly awaiting and expecting you to, I don't know, maybe fail. But at the end of the day, what sorts of expectations have you set for your fan base or for others, you know?
Yeah, and it's hard. And let's not put it, let's not forget that this is not just a remake or a remaster. This is a collection, right? So there's going to be three games in this. The whole point in my mind of them remastering, remaking a game like this is because they want people to be able to enjoy it again, because people don't want to bust out their Xbox 360 and PS3 to play these games. Also, they want a new generation of gamers to be able to enjoy it. And so I feel like they are probably just trying to focus on what makes the game so iconic, and that is not the multiplayer in Mass Effect 3. Even though it was beloved, the single-player storyline of Commander Shepard and his crew are really what makes these games so iconic and what makes people want to play them again. We have a couple comments in the chat. Galvatron says, no, multiplayer is not surprising. Multiplayer requires extra programming for balancing and ongoing maintenance. Yep. And EA is like flowing water. They choose fast, easy, and cheap route. That's right, Mac. Multiplayer requires servers. Which is an additional expense, correct?
Well, yeah? Yes. However, these days, and now I sound like an old man, but these days, with the way that we've got always on DRM and requirements like that, the servers are required to play it in the first place. So, you know, although multiplayer servers for multiplayer are indeed an even larger expense. Because whereas really the server might only need to ping the server, do a DRM check in order to do it, you know, multiplayer is so much more costly. But yeah, no, to your point, it takes more time, effort, and energy from the company to support those sorts of things. And I can't really fault a company for deciding not to go that route, especially if, like you were saying, and here I have to take your word for it, Mr. Nice Guy, but I trust you completely, that, yeah, it was the single player, it was the main storyline of Commander Shepard that really made the games fantastic.
Yeah, and honestly, because I you know, I started with the second one, like, I remember... I've told the story many times about how my Xbox 360 was a game changer for me in my gaming life. I remember playing Dragon Age, and that was like one of the first RPGs that I played. And Mass Effect 2 was like one of the next ones. And so it holds a special place in my heart as far as games go. And so I really hope that they do this right, and I really hope that fans aren't too ridiculous if it's not perfect. Alex Mann says, sometimes the single-player gameplay doesn't work for multiplayer at the time, and the cost of the service for online play can be costly. Yeah, so he's saying what we're saying. So yeah, Mac, we'll have to wait and see how this turns out. I believe it comes out in May. Correct me, chat, if I'm wrong. But it's not that far away, and I'm excited for everyone to be able to re-experience it. That has been our topic of the week.
All right, well, now we turn our attention to a crowdfunding effort that's trying to get off of the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart. You know how it's played. I will present a Kickstarter project, a crowdfunding project. We'll talk about some of the virtues, some of the vices, and at the end we will say whether or not we should think it should be kicked out of here or whether it should be kickstarted. And this crowdfunding project is fitting. I mentioned, of course, games like 11th Hour and 7th Guest from Trilobite Inc. earlier in video game history. Also mentioned a little bit of Myst. Well, the dream here very much reminds me of Myst, or perhaps what's, you know, a little bit more in vogue right now is the Talos Principle. Took me
Dude,
a second.
We're
to
on the same
one.
Page, because that's what I thought when I saw this. Yes. Please continue.
Nice. So here's the short version of the pitch, right? Very much Talos Principle, Myst, this sort of thing. Mysterious island, you're alone, puzzles, all that excellent atmosphere. This single developer is looking for, with 28 or more days, they have to get the last, 24,000 that they're looking for a grant, 26,000, to bring their total up to 24,000 for development of this game. They are looking at a PC release on Steam, And your minimum buy-in, if you're interested in a copy, is either $20 or $25, depending upon whether or not you are an early bird purchaser of this.
Can I ask a real quick question?
Absolutely.
So I'm showing a total of 33,000. You said 24. Did they change it?
Oh, sorry.
I'm just curious.
No, that's just me misspeaking. 34,000, 26,000 more to get to their goal is what they need. So 26,000, and they've got 27 days, rather, to do it in.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I just wanted to check.
Much appreciated. The developer in Sweden has, you know, some interesting looking visuals and some impressive looking things, saying that there will be a total of 200 puzzles in the game, which can be solved in about 6 to 7 hours. But if funding goes beyond the initial, then they can maybe, you know, begin upping those puzzles for more. As currently, it's claimed that the environment and the world is about 95% complete and is primarily, you know, focusing on things such as the puzzles, such as, you know, seasonal effects and things like that. It's being built with the Unity engine. And as I mentioned, one person trying to build this game from scratch.
Really impressive. So, like, I have a soft spot for any dev that is trying to make a game on their own. Because we've seen it done before, and we've seen some really good ones. Cave Story is one of my favorite indies of all time. And there's others that I can't think of right now.
Stardew Valley?
Yeah, yeah. And I believe, I don't know how big Team Cherry is, but I think it's a very small team that made Hollow Knight. So there's been successful teams that made games with one or just a couple people. The one thing I don't like about this game, first of all, let's start with the positive. Beautiful visuals. Trailer is really engaging. Looks like a lot of time has been put into the artwork. And I always find it really impressive when someone can make artwork and program, right? Like, usually it's one or the other. Like, you're a really good artist or you're really good at writing code. And so it's cool that in this case, the dev is able to do both. The thing I don't like about the game is, and this is just personal preference, I like games with puzzles, but I don't like games that are all puzzles.
Mm.
Right? Like I get like a game that maybe has some combat, but then there's also puzzles. Mm. Like Uncharted or even Portal. We think of Portal as a puzzle game, but there was some combat in Portal, right? You know, as you're trying to take out the different stuff. I guess maybe it's using puzzles to do the combat, but regardless. Or The Legend of Zelda, right? There's a lot of puzzles in The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild and the shrines. But ultimately, they're stopping points in between the combat. And it helps keep the pacing right. To me, a game that's just straight up 200 puzzles for 6 or 7 hours would not be appealing.
So did you play the Talos Principle by chance?
I didn't. I actually have it downloaded because I think it was on Game Pass at one point.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't do it. Yeah, I didn't.
Well, no worries. I would be interested to hear what you think after you've had a chance to play the Talos Principle. And I keep referencing that because, unfortunately, while we would love to have a go at the dream and see what it's about and see how it feels, there is not a demo that we can try out. We can only take the screenshots and the GIFs that are a part of the presentation there and go off of that. So for now, the Talos Principle is the best we're going to have for this type of a game in this type of a time frame, you know, with the current gen, current level of technology, right? And, I mean, I can't explain it. Maybe it's just me, but I really have a soft spot for games like this. Even though I'm not usually a big first person person, I do quite enjoy seeing it in the context of puzzles, and yeah, so I very much like the looks of it myself.
Have you gotten to try the Outer Wilds? Not the Outer Worlds, but the Outer Wilds.
I have not.
And this is what that reminds me of, like a game where you are walking around, but you are just straight up, at least in my experience, you're mostly just doing puzzles. And maybe I'm wrong about The Outer Wilds, because once again, I did it for like an hour and I couldn't get into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, Mac. I can't do games where you are a person solving puzzles in the game and strictly doing that. I don't know how people do it. And it's just me. I shouldn't downvote something just because I don't like it. But in this case, I just don't think this is something that will do well.
Mm. Well, for my part, I have a couple of things that make me a little hesitant. One, I appreciate what they're doing. Tanya, I mean, wish you the best of success. But, I mean, $20 for the early bird on your first game it's a little high, and I mean, I appreciate that you're trying to build a big game. I think that that might put a few people off, but the thing that makes me the most hesitant, as always, is the lack of a playable demo. I would love to see this in action. I would love to feel some of the puzzles, even if it was only like 5 or 6. Give me a taste, leave me wanting more. Bring a playable demo and I'll bring a kickstart. But until then, it's going to have to be all the luck in the world, but a kick from me.
And I'm going to go with Mac on this. Once again, and it's hard because I don't ever want to put anyone down, but especially not a singular dev who's doing everything in the game. The artwork, the music, right? Maybe dialogue if there is that, programming, everything. So I want it to succeed, but I can't in good conscience kickstart this. Mm-hmm. So I vote kick.
Yep. Well, that's been Kick or Kickstart. Thank you for playing, and better luck next time.
Dude, I was so into listening to you talk about that I don't have my questions pulled up. Well, everybody, it's time for our next thing, which is called Nerd Flex. Woo-hoo. A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the hosts, and you don't ever really do it. Mac, how many questions did we get right last week? Did we get like 2 of 3, I think?
Dude, I edited that, but I don't even recollect. I know that the only thing I remember really solidly is when we clean sweep either in the affirmative, and I'm just like, yeah, or when we clean sweep, you know, miss them all.
So just as a rundown of this segment, y'all that are here live, you can put questions in the chat if you have some. Trivia questions related to video games, preferably multiple choice, and Mac and I will try to answer them. And we still have some old sound tests, right, Mac?
Indeed, we've got plenty of old sound tests that are still up for grabs, but perhaps more importantly, this is a sound test episode, which means we have a new one. For your ears, and I'm actually gonna try something out. We're not gonna respond, because if you know, remember to tweet at @2nerdsinapod with the hashtag soundtest and identify this episode, episode 175, and well, we'll see if you can if you can guess it. Let us know what you think, what game you think it's from. So listen up, and you know, good luck.
So get one of your hover tanks into the enemy base before the other guy gets to yours. Good luck.
All right, I hope you listened carefully, because that could very well be your ticket to a lovely 2 Nerds in a Pod pin.
Ooh, dope.
Resin.
I got one too.
Yeah.
One. So nice. Woo-hoo. Well, we have our first question in the chat from Galvatron Type R. Keep those questions coming in if y'all would like to. How many different Predators could you play as in the Konami Aliens vs. Predator arcade game? He says no need for multiple choice. Just give me a number, you noobs. Well, Mac, here's what I think. I do remember this game vaguely. I feel like there would probably have been 4.
Most
arcade games give you 4 choices. The ones that I can think of that don't are Marvel games. They give you like a bunch of different options of characters. But most games, you think The Simpsons, you think Ninja Turtles, right? They gave you 4 options. So that's my first instinct to his question, is to say 4.
Well, and for my part, I've never played that game, nor do I think I've ever seen it. So 4 seems as good of an answer as any other.
All right, Galvatron, let us know in the chat if 4 is the correct answer. Watch it be like 4.5, because one of them was a baby or something ridiculous like that. So we'll wait for him to answer that. And in the meantime, while we wait for more questions to come in, I have one here from the test bank. This is a Mario question. What genre of game is Wario's Woods. What genre of game is Wario's Woods?
I could have sworn that Wario's Woods was a side-scrolling platformer. But now I'm wondering.
Well, real quick, let's step back, because he gave us the answer, and this was a trick question that he gave us to how many different predators you could play as. My gosh. He says the answer is two. The Predator Hunter and the Predator Warrior. The other two choices were regular humans. Come on now. Come on now.
Well, so I guess we got stumped, huh?
He's like that teacher who asked you questions where there's like A through E on the test, right? And then some of the answers are like A and C, A and E, B and D.
As it turns out, in a strange twist of fate, Aliens v. Predator happens to be a three-player game instead of the usual four-player game, which is very interesting.
He says that in the chat.
Huh? Yeah.
Well, anyway, you know what? Why don't we skip this Wario's Woods question, because we got two questions from viewers in the chat. Mac, why don't you read one of those questions?
Sure. I will go for Spenis's question. In Street Fighter, the U.S. versions at least, what country is Vega from? I feel like Vega was from Spain?
I think so too, dude. I'm pretty sure.
Okay, yeah, sweet. We will go with Spain. Spenis, let us know if that is correct. Watch it be something like Argentina.
Yeah, something a little more specific. Yeah. Cool. And while he's getting that answer in the chat, Alex Mann asks, which same Link has been in the most Zelda games? Hero of Time, Hero of the Past, Hero of the Winds, or Link of the NES? Ooh, this is a good question.
Yeah, this is good. So let's see. The Hero of Time, of course, means we're talking about Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. So right. We got two there. Hero of the Winds is in Wind Waker, but I don't know if he appears in any others. And then Hero of the Past winds up. Let's see, Hero of the Past. I feel like we had Legend of Zelda Link to the Past.
There was also a Link Between Worlds, which came out for the 3DS.
But was that the same Link?
I mean, it's different graphics, but I assume that that's considered the same one, because it's the same universe, right? I mean, what's canon?
Sure, potentially, yeah. And then, of course, the Link of the NES, and I feel like, I seem to recall in the Zelda timeline that the Link from the NES winds up being, like, the first Legend of Zelda winds up being, like, the tail end, like, the very end of the timeline, after stuff's gone down. So I feel like the NES Link has been in the fewest. So,
well, it's Zelda and Zelda 2, right? Oh, no, wait, that's a different one.
Yeah.
The side-scrolling is a different one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's meant to be a different Link. So I'm torn between I feel like it's A, because he's in two of them, but man... I don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't know. For some reason, I think Hero of Time, just because I feel like it could be a trick question, where it's like at some point, Hero of Time also traveled to this other era. You know what
or,
I mean?
So or it could be that all of them are different except for Ocarina and Majora's Mask. That's the only one that we've got the same. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm inclined toward A. I'm probably wrong, but that's where I'm thinking.
Let's do it. Let us know in the chat, Alex Mann.
In the meantime, Spenis did get back to us and said Vega is from Spain. I know that was an easier question, but I dread trying to go too deep into those realms, as some can be a bit too difficult. Well, Spenis, we appreciate the question. And Alex Mann says, A, Hero of Time has been in Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, and Twilight Princess as the character who teaches the Twilight Princess Link new sword moves. Hero of the Past was in A Link to the Past and Link's Awakening. Ah, that's right, yeah. Hero of Winds was Wind Waker and Phantom Hourglass, and that I didn't know. And NES Link was Zelda's 1 and 2. And I did not realize realize that the NES Link was in both Zelda 1 and Zelda 2. I was pretty sure that those were separate, but hey, I must be wrong about that. We don't have the Google machine open when we're working on these, so we tend to, tend to go for your words on it.
Talk through it.
So A, the Hero of Time, and so we are correct by guess and by golly, even though we were wrong about Twilight Princess, we still arrived at the correct answer. And really, that's what matters in a question.
That's what matters, right? So 2 for 3 this week. Thank you for your questions. We'll do it next week. That is our Nerdflix.
All right, and now we turn to a little bit of legalese. And we talk about something in the legal, or at least legal adjacent area, that might be impacting video games, the way you play them, or in this case, the way you control them. I am not a lawyer, I just play one on this podcast, and we have found out recently, not just that Valve has faced a lawsuit over allegedly plagiarizing the design of the Steam controller, which I know this is going to crush Ish Mobile to hear, but nonetheless, that suit went forward. It's been in the works for a little while there, but what has developed and what is very noteworthy now is that, they won. Not Valve. The other guys. So this comes as a announcement from Corsair. And while I would like to preface this by saying that I did read into as much of the opinions and the, and the orders that I could find, I still didn't have enough of a full picture of the case to feel comfortable trying to summarize the whole thing. So I'm just going to give you the results, although some of the back and forth was really quite interesting. There were things about Xbox mods and everything that I didn't see coming. But anyway, we'll just stick with this. That Ironberg Inventions, as a subsidiary of Corsair, which is why they're the ones saying it, announce here on February 1st, 2021, that in the patent infringement case, Ironberg Inventions v. Valve Corp., the U.S. District for the Western District of Washington in Seattle, the jury unanimously found that Valve Corporation infringed Ironberg's controller patent and awarded Ironberg over $4 million. In addition, the jury unanimously found willful infringement by Valve Corporation. The jury verdict of willful infringement is the first step to a potential award of enhanced damages up to the statutory limit of damages. So, a loss for Valve in this particular case. Again, there was some back and forth about that whole willful infringement. And some of the arguments that I was seeing in what little documentation I had access to was very much related to, was this bit of this, that, or the other included in the patents? How could we have even known? And so on. And a lot of back and forth about that. But it's interesting that the jury unanimously found, in both cases, infringement and willful infringement. So we'll see where we land on this once the, once the dust has finally completely fallen. But it looks like this has been a little bit of a $4 million blow to Valve. And all over Ishmobile's favorite controller. So you hate to see it.
I'm not going to lie. I wish I had one. Like right before they stopped making them, they were selling them for $5. I have no idea why I didn't buy one, right? It would have just been a cool thing to have.
Mm. Yeah. A patent infringing cool thing to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's just been a little bit of legalese.
Cool. Well, before we go, that has been our show. But before we go, we do one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool, nerdy stuff we've been into on Netflix, on Hulu, on YouTube, on Xbox, on PlayStation, on mobile, on PC, maybe even on your Stadia. So let us know in the chat what you've been playing, because we're always looking for cool suggestions. Mac, you want to lead off today?
Absolutely. As for what I've been playing, I've been playing some more Chasm. I've also been playing a certain game gifted to me by a certain very wonderful person. Cyber Shadow, I believe.
Yeah.
That's most of what I've been playing. Oh no, I've also been playing Morrowind on my original Xbox, the old Game of the Year edition. So that's been fun. Now, did we want to talk a bit about Cyber Shadow, or did we want to save that for the post show?
Let's talk about it for a minute. Okay. I want to hear your thoughts. Let's hear it.
So it's pretty darn good. I'm surprised at the difficulty on normal mode, which of course, you know, I always start and do normal. I'm a little bit surprised. I think I'm pretty close to the end. I think I'm in the final bosses as far as I'm aware. I mean, I don't know for sure because I've not been looking up anything about it, but I get the feeling that I'm in the end game. And I'm struggling with a boss that has a couple of different forms. But then again, I've never been the greatest at the Ninja Gaiden adjacent. I'm working on it, and I'll get there eventually.
Yeah, so that's kind of how I feel about it. I think if I was to give this game a rating, it would probably be a 7.5 out of 10, right? Maybe a 7. Like, it's good. It's not great, but it's good. It's worth playing if you like that. You can kind of tell how far you are in a game based on how many slots you've filled, right? If there are 6 slots for new powers and you've filled 4 of them, you know, you can kind of assume you're 2/3 of the way through the game. So Mac, I gotta ask you, did you beat that one snake boss that like electrifies the water? Have you beaten that boss yet?
Yeah, I beat that one.
How did you beat him? Like, I'm so frustrated, I'm trying to figure it out. Maybe we talk about that in the post show.
Sure, let's talk about that in the post show. I'll go over my tips, tricks, and tactics.
Yeah, so you said watching, or what you've been playing, what have you been watching, or did you already say
that? No, for what I've been watching, I've been rewatching some Stargate SG-1 because for research purposes. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it at that. I've also been watching Schitt's Creek. Man, do I love that show. It's good stuff.
Is that on Netflix?
It is on Netflix. You should definitely watch it, but not until you're all caught up on Better Call Saul and The Good Place. Those two come first. Priorities. What I did recently watch, and finished just a little bit ago, is a movie called Stargate Origins, and it is simultaneously infuriating and so close to being something good. I was so disappointed. There were moments where I was just like, yeah, and then so many more where I was just like, oh, please no. The writing's bad, the acting's not great, the directing and the editing. Oh my gosh, the editing. So many times they did way too many close shots when they needed something just a little bit farther back. It felt claustrophobic.
I feel you, man. It is very frustrating. Well, cool. So I'll talk about... were you done, Mac, or did you have more?
All done.
Okay, cool. So I'll talk about what I've been watching, what I've been playing. WandaVision. I've been keeping up with that weekly. New episodes are coming out on Disney Plus. It's a good show. I'll tell you this without spoilers. The way it starts out is not what you should expect. I'll just leave it at that. Because I was frustrated, and then I kept watching, and I'm glad I did. Well, that's all we will say. I started this movie on Amazon Prime. I like Wall Street type of movies. It's called Wall Street Money Never Sleeps, and it's actually a really solid movie. I believe it came out 2010. I had never seen it before. I've been enjoying that. And what else? My wife and I watched some movies. I can't even remember everything I watched. As far as playing, I've been playing Cyber Shadow. I'm still playing a lot of Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. And I got back into Apex Legends as well. So that's what I've been playing. Chat, let's see what you have been into. Mac, you want me to read it all, or are you good, buddy?
I'll take the playing. Alex Mann's playing Super Mario 3D All-Stars, currently Galaxy 1 in that collection. Let's see. A.R. Wilson's playing the same games as usual, so we know what to expect there. Kane has been playing RimWorld and Journey to the Savage Planet. Galvatron's playing Crash Bandicoot 4, Cyberpunk 2077. Not playing that again until they get a full patch on it. Control, Tetris Effect, and Hades.
Nice. And Galvatron's the only one watching stuff. He says he's watching The Mandalorian. Don't come with Mandalorian hate, bro. That's just blasphemous. I'm not even going to read that comment. Mandalorian Soul Onward Blade on 4K. Collateral on 4K. And that is it. Mac, I'll take us home. Thank you everyone for tuning in to Two Nerds in a Pod, episode number 175. If you enjoyed yourself, please share this show with a friend. Give us a rating on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. And be sure to be back here next week on twitch.tv/twonerdsinapod at 9 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Mountain. Same bat place, same bat time, same bat rock. Keep it nerdy, y'all. Be excellent to each other. Deuces.
See ya.